hey, some people believe that the moon is a spaceship that has aliens living inside it. Okay, that's an interesting conspiracy. Let's take it seriously. If we needed to prove that the moon was not an alien spaceship, what would we need to do? How would we go about that? What if we had to do it without just relying on third-party testimony? Revolution love, the earth around the sun, is a perfect lesson of how it should be. So if I can, I'll learn to journey and return, to never rest till I've seen all I can see. No, I'll never rest till I've seen all I can see.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today's Thursday, July 30th. What a bizarre intro clip. What's going on there? What is this show all about? We have more with Isaac Morehouse today, and we are going to be discussing a blog article that caught my attention and generated several questions. It was a relatively straightforward insight, something that I think we've talked about on the show before, but I wanted Isaac's input on this topic. And even though, yeah, things get a little weird and a little experimental in this conversation, it was really centered around how somebody like Isaac, who is a very happy and successful man, curates his inputs to be sufficiently well-informed for like the sake of preparation, but more with a focus on achieving goals and, of course, maintaining happiness and serenity. So that's the conversation we're ultimately going to have. So the blog that Isaac wrote by the same name, I'm going to read it to you. It's real short and sweet. That's what I like about these daily blogging folks. It's blog every day, but it can be nice and concise. And in our very short attention span, blah, 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 fast paced, blah, 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 you've heard it all before. Isn't it nice when you can take it, you know, if you're trying to reach out to somebody, if you're trying to make an impact, you can just take a nice, easy to digest little nugget and use it as a kind of pattern interruption. A lot of these short blogs, a lot of the praxis people do, these blogging challenges, really work well for that, I have found. So I'm going to read it, and then Isaac and I are going to discuss it. There is infinite information in the universe. Anytime you select a tiny slice of info and focus on it, you are creating a story that is different from reality itself. Imagine a movie sliced into a million still screenshots. Say it was impossible to watch the movie, and your only way of interacting with it was with these screenshots. If someone picked three of them and presented it to you as the truth of the movie, they'd be wrong. Even if the screenshots weren't tampered with or substituted for fakes. If the person presenting the facts of the movie to you had an axe to grind or wasn't so scrupulous about the accuracy in screenshots, it would be even worse. But the main point is that even if trying to be accurate, any version of the movie selected from a few microsecond still frames will still present a story that's incorrect. Once you realize this, you can select your own slices based on what helps you achieve your goals. It may be no more accurate in terms of explaining the real movie, but none can be. So you might as well choose slices that help you. Better yet, you can stop worrying about figuring out the right version of this movie from the past and start creating your own story going into the future. News is a specific view of reality. It's always wrong. Worse, it's usually bad for your health and sanity. Choose better slices of reality and your reality will improve. So I love that. There were things there that I agreed with. There were things there that I disagreed with. There were things there that provoked questions. And what did it take? 90 seconds to read? Isaac also wrote a similar blog article over 9 years ago, January 20th, 2011. It was called Don't Watch the News. In it, he explains, this is not because the cold, hard realities of terrestrial life are simply all bad news. In fact, every day, billions of people are voluntarily, peacefully cooperating and being made better through trade, commerce, community, and friendship. Millions of things are invented. Quality of life improves. The creative destruction of the market in both goods and ideas brings about untold beauty and opportunity. Indeed, with a little bit of reflection, it is not hard to see how vast, mysterious, and awesome life is, even in the smallest tasks of a typical day. But, probably for rational reasons, the news chooses to focus on those relatively few happenings between relatively few people that are violent, coercive, and troubling. A disproportionate amount of space is devoted to that tiny sliver of our individual and societal existence, politics, and nearly all the rest, all the other dangers and troubles in the universe. And while I still agree with the spirit of that blog article, today's conversation, I think, does a good job of bringing it up to date a little bit, because it was written in 2011. It is now, as I'm sure you're aware, 2020. And holy shit, media literacy is a far more demanding pursuit, I would say, today than it was then. I was talking with School Sucks listener favorite Wes Bertrand on the phone this morning and reminiscing. You know, I was saying, remember 10 years ago when we thought we just needed to teach people what logical fallacies were being used against them and that would dramatically improve the quality of discourse and the widespread subsequent relationship with reality? Didn't work out that way. Of course, we didn't know back then that they were gearing up to teach people in certain programs in higher education that logic is just like a cruel trick used to oppress people. But look at me, I'm getting all bent out of shape here, where there's nothing but good times ahead for you. The next half hour is going to be pure delight. Please remember to check out Isaac's very efficient blog, in that you can get a lot of value with a very small time investment, isaacmorehouse.com. And also, if you or anyone you know, or perhaps you hear about somebody that somebody else knows that you know, is currently contemplating a career launch or a career relaunch, as a lot of people are, go to, or tell them to tell them to go to crash.co to make a profile. I know people who are doing it and really enjoying the process. So that's it. Here we go.
Century kid surrounded by illusion and confusion. So maybe if you're holding out for the truth now, could it be the greatest weapon?
You say in the very short first paragraph, there is infinite information in the universe. Anytime you select a tiny slice of info and focus on it, you are creating a story that is different from reality itself. Now, you blog every day still, right?
I'm actually taking a temporary hiatus from daily blogging for the first time in quite a long time. And I'm going to see if I can stand it, because usually I need my daily blogging, but I'm trying not doing it for a short period.
All right. But in this exercise, right, you sit down in front of the computer one day, you write this out. What inspires this post?
You know, I haven't watched the news for probably close to 15 years, at least 10 or 12 years, as a deliberate choice. I just realized that. And I wrote an article many years ago, probably 10 years ago, called Why I Don't Follow the News, which you can also find on the blog. And it's, you know, essentially telling a somewhat similar story about everything is a story about reality that represents a limited part of the totality of potential reality, right? And so any worldview you look through, any series of information that you consume, none of it is telling you everything about the world at any given moment, or certainly through time. And so it's always a lens of the world. And if one particular lens of the world, the nightly news, makes you depressed and unhappy, why would you keep looking through that lens? It's like if you have 10 windows in your house and every time you look out one, you see like a dirty junkyard and it makes you depressed. Well, why wouldn't you look out the window that looks over a pond that's nice? And you're always looking through a window. You're always looking through a fragment of reality. Why not choose the one that gives you a view of the world that makes you feel happy, that makes you come alive, and that helps you best navigate reality? And I found, and the fear a lot of people have is, well, if you're uninformed about what's going on in the world, you won't be able to navigate as effectively. You'll get blindsided. You'll be unrealistic about whatever is happening, and you won't know when all, you know, whatever important events, you won't be a good citizen or whatever. I found that when I stopped watching the news, and I haven't for years, none of that came true. I have suffered zero ill effects of any kind. I don't know the names of almost any politicians. I don't know what the latest debates are. I don't know. I'll follow sports news sometimes during the sports season of certain teams that I like, whatever, but I don't know any of that stuff. And I haven't suffered a whit from it. In fact, my ability to see things more clearly to not be surprised by things, to not be depressed by things, to see opportunity where others see pessimism and despair is like dramatically increased. And so when all this COVID stuff started.
Yeah. See, let me just stop you there. Like,
go ahead.
You know enough about what's going on. Like, I listen to the podcast you do. I listen to the conversations that you have with TK Coleman. Like, you seem informed because as a media creator, I feel like there's some, especially when we're trying to like look at certain events in the world through a kind of critical thinking or better learning lens, it behooves me to be informed, but to find that balance of like, all right, well, how much can I dig into this without not enjoying life as much, right? This is like one of the reasons why like social media and my relationship with social media in 2017 was one of the decisions, one of the reasons why I made the decision to do like extensive travel for almost a month and a half around the entire country. Because I said, I'm seeing the world, I'm seeing the planet Earth through the lens of this screen. And it is starting to convince me that I live on the shittiest planet in this entire solar system, right? Just from that social media window into the world. So I said, I have to stop looking through this window, right? I have to stop looking at this junkyard. But you are well-informed enough to have intelligent and meaningful conversation about current events. So how do you feel like you're pulling that off?
Well, I usually, if I do that, it's usually I bring in somebody who follows them more closely than I do. But here's, and I think everybody has to find their balance. So for me, I try to follow people on Twitter, for example. So I used to be really big on Facebook, and then Facebook started to depress me too much. And so I'm hardly on Facebook at all now. I think I have things that post there automatically from other platforms, but I've been on Twitter much more for the last couple of years.
Twitter.
And so I just try to follow people that are interesting to me.
Yeah,
and those people will often comment on current events. And so it's sort of like third hand, like somebody will say, and it's just like the kind of people that I think have interesting commentary. Like I would never just read a news article straight up. Like that's just like, you know, taking, I don't know, straight Everclear into your, you know, intravenously instead of having like a nice mixed cocktail drink, you know?
Right.
So like I'll see people tweet, you know, something that's like a meme or a joke about an article. And I usually just have to like infer and put the pieces together myself and be like, oh, okay. Trump must have said something that half of Twitter thinks was racist and half of Twitter thinks was funny. I'm sure if it's something really interesting or funny, I'll hear about it directly from one of my friends in one-on-one conversation. And I just sort of like can piece together the big themes. Okay, it's clear there's a whole bunch of protests going on and people are really upset and people are debating about whether the protests are good or whether they're bad. And maybe I'll listen to a podcast where a couple guys that I find interesting are talking about their views on it. And that's how I'll kind of just find out those things bit by bit.
Right. So I ask because obviously you put a lot out there, right? And a lot of people come to you for what your thoughts are about things that happen. You know, I look at something like memes, right? So this is a debate that's going on in my head right now. Memes, I would argue, are a form of newspeak, like in the Orwellian sense. Yes, they can be funny, but they are reductive to a point where they, you know, take a large horizontal of information that has like a deep vertical to it too, and simplifies it to a picture. And people are using them to communicate and exchange ideas, right? So I always think, I feel, and this is something that I know there's a way to get over and I just don't know how to do it yet. Like I will get ready to post memes. I will find great memes and get ready to put them on Instagram and then on Facebook. And I'll say, no, this is noise. I'm doing noise. I don't want to be noisy right now. Sometimes I can't help it, but if I can, if there's that space between the stimulus of a good meme and my decision to post it, I will use that space and say, no, you know what? I'm not going to bother anyone with this right now. I'm not going to upset people today. I think that they are, and I'm just saying this is what's happening. There's no judgment in this. It's just a fact that the preponderance of memes filling the internet right now is creating a lot of noise that I think is actually reducing people's ability to understand because they're so zoomed out, right? Like Steve Patterson and I just had this conversation about, he talks about this critical thinking technique of zooming in and zooming out, right? Going vertically into something is like the zoom in and you can see all the fine details, but also to zoom out and see the big picture to make sure you're not, you know, like a lot of academics are, lost in, you know, your particular world of a thing where you don't even understand how it works in like a systems thinking kind of way. But obviously any meme is just permanently as zoomed out as it can be. So if people are communicating in them, it's basically like the minimal populating the internet with the minimal amount of understanding about a thing. And even though that's the way it is, and I said no judgment, it is newspeak. And I do think it is a problem, especially as far as like getting people to connect and really, really have difficult conversations about certain things.
Okay. So I'm going to give two things that may sound contradictory at first, but they're not at all to me. Personally, I don't communicate in memes. Like I don't share memes and tweet memes. And whenever, you know, my daily blogging, my podcast, even my tweets and things to the greatest extent possible, I never mention politicians by name. I try never to write things that if they were read a year or 10 years or 100 years from now, they wouldn't make sense because they're referencing current events. So like instead of seeing a specific news article that I think is really fishy and writing a blog post about why I think this is fake news, instead I step back and I write a blog post about the concept of fake news in general and how when you look at it in a certain lens, all news is fake news because that's something that's timeless. And I'm always trying to talk about things that I think are timeless and that are not going to pin me to some historical moment or some news item and are not going to be irrelevant in the future. And I just like doing it that way. It feels more true to who I am.
Totally agree. And I've said that same thing on the show for years. I don't want to be creating a permanent digital record of myself hysterically reacting or even like overreacting to things that nobody even cares about 3 months later. You know, because some people make a career out of it and that's fine. And they have some of the most popular blogs and popular YouTube channels and it's a model that works for them. And if they can maintain their sanity doing that because they have the constitution for it, great, more power to them. They deserve all the success they have. I would be in a mental institution if I tried to do that for 3 months. So I'm going to defend myself slipping into that. And I want to like actually back out of it a little bit more and do exactly what you're saying, which I feel like we've done a pretty good job of through the years, like not being like too focused in on things that aren't going to matter.
And I think you have. I mean, your podcast has tremendous staying power when people come to me and they're homeschool curious or, thinking about education differently. I can be like, just go check out the School Sucks Project. And I know that if they just start at the beginning of your podcast or just start with any episode that's of interest, it's not like, go check out the daily whatever report. And it's like, well, I don't know what they're going to be talking about today because it's all current news. You know what I mean? Okay. So let me tell you why I love memes. Even though I'm not a producer of memes for the most part, I find them hilarious. I love consuming them and I'm not at all worried about that. I mean, sure, memes could be negative and people could think less and be more just symbol, emotion, reaction, response, just like anything. Technology can be used for bad or people can get addicted to it in bad ways, but it can be empowering. But here's why I think memes have a huge value that I didn't hear you mention. When we're in a world where everybody's saying things and the cost of conveying information and making opinions known is cheaper than ever, and there's all this, stuff being shared all the time. And we're in a world where scrutinizing, trying to deplatform or cancel or shame people for saying things the wrong way, it's sort of a high risk society to say things openly that you mean in some senses. Now, I think the risks tend to be overblown. I think people that are super scared of cancel culture are often too scared, but I think there's something to that. And so memes provide, they're very, very subversive. They provide a way to say things without saying them. In fact, they provide a way to mock the censors because they're too daft and culturally out of touch to even know what you're trying to communicate. And your rebellious, mischievous audience knows exactly what you're talking about. And so this reminds me of like the former Soviet Union, a lot of those countries, the artists and stuff, they would, even if they were commissioned by the Communist Party, they would have all this little satire worked in the symbolism, in their artwork, in their movies and music, that the Politburo was too daft and culturally out of touch to even understand. But all the cool, hip kids in the underground, they knew it was hilarious. They knew that they were mocking those people through this stuff. This reminds me of like when New York was like, we created a hotline for you to text us if people are breaking lockdown protocol, and they got flooded with like dick pics and stuff, right? Yeah. Like that is the subversive, rebellious. Memes are like, we have our own little subversive language that allows us to communicate in ways that are too fast and too nuanced for the would-be regulators or cultural elites who are trying to tell everybody what they're allowed to say to catch up with. And the second thing that I think is really interesting that adds a ton of depth to memes is that memes are not just one little idea in isolation communicated through a picture. They are a progressive. They are an ongoing narrative that's continually getting built, because memes, the whole game is to modify a meme that everybody was already familiar with. You take a familiar meme and you take it in a slightly different direction. And then someone takes that in a slightly different direction. And so there's this huge history. I remember the first time I got on, there's a subreddit called like Photoshop Battle. And you go and you look at these and you're like, I don't know what any of these mean, but if you follow them for like a month, then they all start to get funny, because all of them, they'll put up a photo and then people will Photoshop it and they'll try to see who can do the funniest Photoshop with any photo. But the things that they do to it are always referencing previous Photoshop battle photos and previous things that people did to those, and it builds on itself. And so there's this whole language and like lineage and heritage of memes, where they originated and how they used to mean this, and then somebody took it this direction. And so it communicates this really rich depth of information in a way that's like subversive and safeguarded. It's kind of like using fiction, right? If you can use fiction and fantasy to communicate truths that you're either not allowed or not capable of articulating clearly, directly in words. And so I think memes are very valuable in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I get the subversive argument. And also it is like a space to feel uncomfortable when you encounter one. Like I remember, I think when I probably around the time I first got a smartphone, there was this site called, I've never heard anyone say it out loud, Imgur, I-M-G-U-R.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I would, and this was, you know, 7-8 years ago, and I wouldn't know, it was all memes. I wouldn't get any of them, but I just kept looking at them. And right, you're right, there's a language that you learn there, but there is also like, instead of, what's the alternative? I didn't want to make it sound like I was like, you know, people shouldn't share memes, they should share news articles.
You can go to a dark place, right? And you can turn into... you can turn into the perpetual critic who's never a creator, because memes in a way are a critique of dominant narratives or the status quo. And you can always be the snarky kid who sits in the back of the class, arms crossed, and's like, I'm too cool for that. I have jokes.
Yeah.
And there's a good rebelliousness in that, but it can also prevent you from ever being a creator as well. And so there's definitely a danger in them.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last question related to this, just to go back to the whole all news is fake news, how would you suggest, or maybe you could talk just briefly about your process of better like curating your inputs, the inputs that you accept, and how news was phased out of that, and the things that actually helped you achieve your goals and live a better life was kind of put into, you know, your queue or your consumption feed?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of evolved over the years, but I have a goal to have at least one interesting conversation every day. And that doesn't sound too lofty, but you realize that a lot of days you're just going about your work, responding to emails, doing tasks, whatever. And you have maybe conversations or quick back and forth, but you don't have like any interesting conversations. It doesn't have to be anything long. So I try to make sure that I do. Sometimes it's a work conversation with a colleague. Sometimes it's an email with somebody. Sometimes it's a podcast interview like this. Like, this is an interesting conversation. I fulfilled my quota for the day. And I have an app called Voxer, which is like audio messages asynchronous. And I have just a handful of friends that will just Vox back and forth ideas. And so we don't have to both be available for a phone call, but like TK and I Vox all the time. I'll be like, hey, check it out. I got a question, blah, blah, blah. And then whenever he's available, he'll leave me a Vox. And then I'll listen to some podcasts. I'll pop into Twitter, and I just kind of try to monitor my emotional and mental state with the information that's coming in, and then make sure, like, am I having some kind of engaging, meaningful conversation on a regular basis? And to me, that's where the best stuff comes, because then I'll hear the things that are interesting to people that are interesting to me and their take on them. And then that will kind of send me down different rabbit holes. So that's kind of one way. And then another thing, and this is really ramped up, So it started with just, I don't follow the news. Now, especially in the last year or 6 months, especially, not only do I not follow the news, but even when I see it indirectly, when I see people tweet videos, whether they're taken on a person's cell phone or whether they're covered by a major news outlet or stories or studies, I have gone from a default agnosticism of like, yeah, I don't know anything about this. Maybe true, maybe false, who knows, to a default assumption that it's made up. And that's where that kind of assume everything is fake news. And I'll tell you why, because I found that if you do that, the explanatory power and the ability to prevent yourself from getting upset is so much higher. And so if I see people saying, oh my God, look at this video of somebody running over a protester.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, okay, let's assume that this is fake. Let's just assume that this is like staged, or this is a video from some other event and someone's saying that it's about this, because that has happened so much recently. There's been so much provable bullshit going around that nobody's checking on.
Or just reappropriating pictures, right? Like taking a picture.
Photoshopping.
Of one place.
I mean, major news outlets have like used videos of one event to say it's another, or have like staged stuff. And like, so I'm just going to say, what if you just pretended that every piece of news you shared was fake and was staged, or was at least misappropriated or Photoshopped? All of a sudden, you're not threatened by this stuff. You're like, oh, that's probably fake. And then you start to think through like, who would fake it? Why would they fake it? What are the odds? And if you really want to go down and dig, I feel like you're going to get to something approximating, if not truth, at least usefulness more quickly. If you just assume, because I've just found in this really started when I was really getting involved in sort of Bitcoin debates and discussions. I've been interested in Bitcoin for years, but in 2017, this big debate about block sizes and all this stuff I don't want to get into, but I discovered that probably, I'm not kidding, probably like 70% of Reddit commenters and voters were either duplicate like sock puppet accounts or bots. Probably the same percentage of crypto Twitter is fake accounts or bots. Like every time I'd see a post with a certain point of view, and then I'd see it had like 100 comments, and I start clicking on the profiles of every commenter that was like, you know, you're a piece of shit or whatever. Every one of them had an account that had like one follower and was just created a week ago. And I was like, it's all fake. Like it's all freaking fake. You can't trust what is real and what's not. And so I'm just going to always assume that it's fake. When they say there's an outrage about coffee cups at Starbucks, I've never met a single person who was mad about Starbucks coffee cups, but people saying there was anger about it caused other people to respond and say, no, there's not anger about it. And then there's this, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that there was never anger in the first place and that it was all just made up. And if you just assume that that's true, suddenly things become funnier and it's more like the WWE and you don't get so upset. You just treat it as ridiculous entertainment.
Yeah. You know, and the remedy, like a really reliable remedy is just like go outside, like leave your computer,
right?
Put it down and just go outside and just look around at how the world actually is where you live.
Yes.
You know, that kind of goes back to me talking about traveling and seeing the world through this very foggy, dirty, you know, window that was always jeopardizing my serenity. But like just in the last 4 or so months, I felt like I was a pretty good curator and pretty conscious of like how information intake affected me negatively. And I knew how to like modulate that properly to maintain serenity. And then this COVID thing happens and I took like a Trivium-like approach to like, okay, well, first we'll do the collect, right? We'll do the grammar stage where we just cast as many nets into the sea and we pull in everything, boots, jellyfish, whatever. And then we'll sort it. Like we'll sort it eventually. But I almost got addicted to the casting of the nets, you know, just because the information fire hose was just like, it was unlike anything we had experienced for like 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row. And I felt like I almost got addicted to it the way that I was when maybe like, when I was first using social media and I just didn't know how it was going to affect me. I wasn't being conscious online. Yeah. I felt like I fell back into that and it took me retreating away from the world for almost a month, like up into the mountains of New Hampshire to actually kind of like reset.
That sounds amazing, by the way. So I'm going to, I'm going to make a flat earther comparison here that
love it.
I think is actually great. So I, as like an aside, and I, by the way, I loved your series years ago on conspiracy theories. I find conspiracy theories delightfully entertaining as just like a, you know, something to poke into and think about. But here's why. And this is why I mentioned flat earth. When things get really crazy like this, there's this value in adopting kind of a radical empiricism. And I think, if I'm thinking correctly, David Hume is kind of one of the people who is really crazy in this way. Like, what if I said, I'm not allowed to claim that something is true or factually correct if I don't have direct firsthand experience of it.
Mm.
And now, obviously, that's not like a, you know, that runs into limits of usefulness. If I'm like, well, I've never been to Australia, so I don't believe Australia exists. Until someone proves to me otherwise. Like, there may be ways in which that's stupid or makes my life worse. But as a thought experiment, I find this really, really interesting. And this is right. Where like some of the crazy conspiracy theorists. So there's this guy I know who is like a flatter, or actually I think he believes now in a, he was like an old TA that I used to have in college and then he got kicked out of the academy, whatever. I think he believes in like a gyroscopic, a flat plane inside like a, I don't know. But because he's like a radical, extreme empiricist. And he's like, I observe these certain, you know, reflections of the sun that I could only be explained if there was like a gyroscope, whatever. And he's like, and I will only believe what I've observed firsthand. I've never been up into space myself. And so I can't believe that it's real. And you can laugh at the silliness and the inefficiency of that, but there's something when times get crazy with this COVID stuff and with this riot stuff, I was like, okay, this information I'm taking in, people are like, there's tanks in the streets, people are getting killed. There's people burning down buildings, martial law is in effect. Everybody is trying to throw everybody, report everybody else to the authorities. And I'm like, I don't know what's true anymore. And so I step outside and I'm like, what if I'm only allowed to form a picture of the world based on direct firsthand experience? I go walk in my neighborhood. Nobody's wearing masks. Everybody smiles at me. Nobody moves off the sidewalk when I walk by. I go to the grocery store. I see black people, white people during this protest stuff. All smiling, happy, kind to each other. I don't see any protesting. I don't see any looting or demolishing. Now, I heard that downtown Charleston, there was some protesting and stuff like that going on. I wasn't there firsthand. So in my world, in my neighborhood, in the suburbs I live in the city I live in the grocery stores I go to, the weather's nice. Everyone's smiling. I don't see or know any firsthand experience of anyone getting COVID or anyone being particularly scared of getting COVID. And this is the world that I actually live in day to day. So I can't prove what's happening in New York or LA or Minneapolis. I can get addicted to following the sensational information. But what if I say I'm not allowed to believe anything I can't prove firsthand? It doesn't mean I have to disbelieve it. I can be totally agnostic. I can be like, I have no idea. Now, there are potential dangers to that, right? If it's like there are signs, if you're paying attention to the world, that whatever is hitting all these other cities is about to hit you and you're going to, tanks are going to be in the streets and you're going to be locked in your home and you're going to, maybe I would want to know about that coming so I could flee. I understand right. That I'm not arguing that complete ignorance is always the case, but there are times when just emotionally saying my view of what's happening in the world is going to be better informed by what the people I actually meet and interact with are like, because they're different online than they are in person. The people in my neighborhood, I wouldn't be surprised if half of them are totally different online and who are getting in fights and yelling at each other, but they don't do that when I talk to them in person. It's perfectly friendly. So I think there's something to be said for that radical empiricism.
Well, I think that there is, and even just the exercise of it kind of forces you back into your sphere of control, right?
Yeah.
And you get to live there. So like I was fortunate enough to be in a position where I'm pretty mobile. My work lets me go places. There was a very series of very good reasons to be in one place versus a city. So I packed up and moved in the midst of all of this. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go and live in that world, right? Where I don't actually have to worry about these things. And the likelihood of the internet spilling into my actual life is going to be a lot lower in this place. I'm going to go there. So yeah. I did that.
This is just an aside, and you'll appreciate this.
Sure.
There's something that I think is really fun about conspiracy theories as a learning model as well.
Yes.
If you're like, hey, some people believe that the, you know, moon is a spaceship that has aliens living inside it. Ha ha ha. Isn't that stupid? We can't talk about that because that's what dumb people believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what have you gained? Maybe a couple minutes entertainment. But what if you say, okay, that's an interesting conspiracy. Let's take it seriously. if we needed to prove that the moon was not an alien spaceship, what would we need to do? How would we go about that? What if we had to do it without just relying on third-party testimony? Is there something we could do? Could we use some instruments to measure? Could we observe it through telescope under certain conditions? What would be required? And just figuring out even how you know what you think you know, how do you know for sure the things that you feel confident in? Questioning sort of, it gets you understanding like epistemology. It's a very, very, like to me, if schools were like, okay, here's a crazy conspiracy theory. We're going to spend the semester trying to disprove it. And we got to do it only using firsthand knowledge. Let's see how far we can get. Like, that's an interesting learning tool that's way more engaging and beneficial than, no, we can't talk about that because experts have already proven that only idiots believe it. And it's like, let's engage the craziest ideas because they're the most interesting. They're the most curious. Like, prove to me that gravity exists. Prove to me that you exist, right? And some of this stuff is just thought experiments and philosophy, but some of them are things that you can try out. You can get out into the world and even just figuring, asking the question, how would one go about proving? Is it even a falsifiable claim? Those lead you to really cool understandings of the scientific method and all this kind of stuff that you don't get if you simply say we can only talk about things that aren't crazy.
So we value, or I'll speak for myself, I value this more as this exercise, this challenge. And I don't think we're doing a covert promotion of postmodernism here, right? We're actually talking about the value of the exercise.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not at all saying, oh, there's no meaning. Things only have meaning you assign to them. Nothing objectively is provable or anything like that. But I think the number of things that we can prove with 100% certainty is much smaller than we think. And then beyond those things, and some of those are perhaps moral propositions, some of them are perhaps cosmological or ontological propositions. Beyond that, things move into probabilities. And I think probabilistic thinking is incredibly valuable for factual claims and understanding the world. I mean, I know running a company, I'd be crushed if I assumed certitude. If I was like, the way that most people approach their beliefs about policy or causal relationships in economics. No, if you raise the minimum wage, unemployment will happen. No, it won't. Whatever.
Right.
Instead, being like, well, probabilistically, given what I know about the causal relationships, it seems like there's a much higher likelihood that you'll have unemployment, but there's a lot of unknown factors, right? In my business, I have to think that way. If I was like, if we change this landing page, it will get us more traffic, period. There's not a discussion here. I have to be like, look, I think the probability is really high. Let's change it. Let's measure it. And then even if we measure it, we can't prove for sure that that's what caused it. We could have had a lot of other causes, but you have to kind of take that chance. And the more things that you can be sort of agnostic or humble or probabilistic about, the better, because then it helps you the things that really matter, your core values. You know, I believe that murder is antithetical to flourishing, meaningful human life with 100% certitude. Great. I can stand on that. Calling somebody a jerk, I don't know. You know what I mean? So, you know, I go on these tangents. I go on these rants, Brett. It's a problem I have. I'm a talker.
That was exactly what I wanted to happen. So that was perfect. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming back to the show. And I wanted to wish you the best of luck with everything that's happening right now with Crash. And hopefully you can come back and update us in the near future.
Hey, I would love to anytime, Brett. Keep up all the great work you're doing, man.
Standing on the moon, but I somewhere in San Francisco, on a back porch in July, just looking up at heaven, at this crescent in the sky, in the sky.